Welcome to the MPM Interconnections Podcast. I'm East Coast reporter Colt Shaw, and joining me this week is Steve Lieberman, Vice President of Transmission and Regulatory Affairs at American Municipal Power. We discuss PJM's ongoing efforts at reforming its forward-looking capacity market and push back to some of its recent FERC-approved changes ahead of this summer's auction. All right, Steve, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, you've been following this for some time, but FERC has approved obviously some major overhauls to PJM's capacity, you know, forward-looking capacity market. And there was a lot of pushback on some of the aspects from developers and other stakeholders. So FERC has approved a 30-day or roughly 30-day delay this summer for the upcoming auction for, I believe, the 2025-2026 year. Partly they kind of just blamed stakeholder confusion, and we're obviously going to get into that a little bit. But I don't think there was any confusion that there was a need for reform to the capacity market. Those efforts have been ongoing for some time, and I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts as a market participant, if there was a moment kind of when you realized that there was going to need to be some kind of overhaul or change to the process.
Sure, Colt. Happy to answer that question. It's a great question. Timely, of course. Just want to make sure it's clear. You and I are talking. These are my comments. Sure. May not be those of my employer or members of my employer. So just wanted to get that out there. To your question, for as long as I can remember, there have been constant rule churn within PJM's capacity construct, which is called the Reliability Pricing Model, or RPM is the acronym. Remember that RPM was born from a settlement process. I think it was in 2006 when people got together in DC and really kind of locked themselves in a room and figured out a way to get some rules together that would develop the capacity construct. The RPM went live in 2007. RPM was not something that everyone came together, you know, and had some kumbaya moment and embraced it from day one. It might seem like semantics, but I struggle to consider RPM a market, given all of the administrative overlays that mandate load participation. So there's no willingness on buyers' behalf. They have to participate, and PJM says how much there is. And the constant changes about what is allowable for sellers to include in their offers. We need monitoring for sure to ensure results are competitive. We don't want economic withholdings, physical withholdings, exercising seller market power, those sorts of things. But it's not a market from an economic standpoint, or at least from how I think of it. To your question, I think the first real time where I believed we needed to seriously overhaul RPM was after the 2014 polar vortex, when the weather event resulted in over 20% or 40 gigawatts of PJM's capacity resources being forced out. That's a shocking quantity of capacity that has been paid to be available when called on by the system operator that was unavailable for one reason or another. From a supplier perspective, there are always going to be bad days when the plant is not operable. It's a machine after all, and machines break. But to have so many machines unavailable simultaneously raised questions to me, at least, about what was it that consumers were paying for in RPM.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, kind of one of the big changes, and I guess the most controversial, was the change to the methodology to determine a resource's contribution to grid reliability so they can, quote, better reflect the financial risk that they're taking by committing capacity. I'm wondering if there's kind of a consensus view among at least developers as to kind of what was wrong with the ELCC and the existing system, and kind of get into the fix that they proposed.
Sure, Cole, that's a great question. There's a couple different things here in your questions. I'm going to try to unpack them. As far as a resource's contribution to grid reliability and being better able to reflect the financial risk of committed capacity, that stemmed from the overhauls PJM unilaterally implemented after that 2014 polar vortex, when it added something called capacity performance. And that's kind of the goal for capacity resources. So in short, it's a carrot and stick approach to having a capacity obligation. Under a certain set of circumstances, PJM would consider the moment to be when all capacity resources are needed. They would say, okay, this is, you know, you have an obligation to perform now. And there's a trigger that, you know, mandates when that is. We call that performance assessment intervals. Like RPM, we use acronyms. A PI is the acronym for that. And so the way the whole thing works is those that perform don't get penalized, and those that do not perform do get penalized. And then you get a monetary penalty, and those that did perform or overperform collect those penalties from those that did not. So that's kind of the carrot and the stick approach. So that financial risk of having committed capacity was born out of the introduction of capacity performance. And the financial risk of not performing during those events, again, that's supposed to be on the supply side. So load would be indifferent to which generators are not performing and which generators are performing or overperforming. They don't have to necessarily pay for them outside of what they already paid for them to be there in the first place. But there is a risk, of course, that again, these are machines, they just break. It's no different than your car. Sometimes you go out there, you turn the key, the thing doesn't start. You've maintained it, it's just a bad day. But in the world of RPM, that bad day could cost you a lot of money. So we allowed sellers to include a risk adder and into and with it's a part of their sell offer with all these other variables and components. You come up with a number, and that's the amount that you could offer. That risk adder is called capacity performance quantifiable risk. Acronym is CPQR. So there's that. ELCC is a separate thing. That's an acronym that stands for effective load carrying capability. ELCC measures a resource's contribution to reliability based on something called the incremental quantity of load that can be satisfied by adding that resource to the grid. That's what ELCC is. We, as a stakeholder body, ELCC was recently added on something called an average basis, but only for inverter-based resources. So these are your wind resources, solar resources, batteries, those sorts of things, not your thermal generators. Thermal resources had a separate capacity accreditation formula based on when the resource was not available. That's called forced outage rate. So you took, how much capacity you had, derated it by the amount of time you're not available, and you come up with another number. And that's how we sort of derated the amount of capacity that thermal generators would be able to offer in. When PJM introduced through the FERC filing that we were talking about, or we're going to be talking about, they proposed something called marginal ELCC, and that's also applied to everybody now. So it's no longer just for the renewables, the batteries, the wind, the solar, it's for everybody. There was a lot of ink spilled about that proposal. And just recently, PJM asked for more time to implement the auction, this upcoming auction that would include that ELCC component as one of the key drivers for resource accreditation.
Yeah, and it seems like kind of one of the main things people zeroed in on was the tech-specific class ratings used to kind of crunch those numbers, and they seem to be kind of all over the place, at least from just a an outsider looking in. Offshore wind jumped from 21% in the fall to 35%, solar from 33% down to 9%, and 4-hour storage from 92% down to 59%. And I'm just kind of wondering kind of what the upshot of that ultimately is for developers in any one of those technologies and kind of what that means to them at the at you know when push comes to shove.
Yeah, the changes in the class ratings you mentioned, as well as those you did not, there's a dozen or so different categories, is the key reason some stakeholders argued that PJM was not ready to implement the upcoming capacity auction. There were so many questions about why the numbers changed. There are questions about if PJM's market monitor has had a chance to validate the model used to derive those values. Outstanding questions about just it, to your point, why did fixed panel solar go from 1% weight, 33% down to 9%? That's a huge difference. We were just lots of stakeholders came forward and asked lots of questions. And to PJM's credit, they sort of said, okay, let's call time out here. Let's get some more education. But to do that, we need FERC to give us some more time. And so they did make that filing, and they did receive approval for the delay. If there's any upshot, it's a hard thing to say. It would be that if capacity accreditation decreases, what we would imagine is that capacity prices could increase enough to provide economic incentive to continue to develop new projects. So while you may get paid for fewer megawatts, the amount that you get paid per megawatt could be higher. It's hard to say if one will offset the other, but it is hard to think of too many upshots, quite honestly. But like I said, I don't consider RPM to be a market, and I think we're closer now to a point where RPM will be a construct that has a predetermined price based on some black box model. And it's a concern for sure.
Yeah, well, kind of all this confusion is sort of what prompted the, month plus delay now, that they're basically said they're using to kind of educate stakeholders and walk them through how they arrived at these models and things like that. So I'm just kind of wondering how that is coming along and if you've listened into any of these meetings yet and just sort of, yeah, how that's coming along.
Right. Yep. So FERC did approve the requested 35-day delay. So I supported the delay for a litany because of a litany of questions stakeholders were asking. I do participate in those stakeholder meetings sometimes much more actively, and sometimes you could be an active participant by passively, participating, meaning just listening. And when you sit back sometimes and you listen to all the questions that are flying back and forth between stakeholders and the subject matter experts that PJM has, you realize, boy, like it's not just me that doesn't understand this, or it's not just, somebody who has this type of business interest that doesn't like this. The questions and the concerns were coming from a wide swath of stakeholders. And so I think that was what really got PJM's attention, was so many people from so many different sectors with so many different business interests were all saying, we don't understand what the heck this thing is doing. Can we please slow this down? So where we are is we do have that delay. The auction will not be run in June. Instead, it'll be run in July. But personally, I'm concerned that even with that delay, there's not going to be enough time to provide confidence in the results. And that's not a good thing for developers, and it's not a good thing for consumers.
Yeah, well, I guess another one of the main critiques that seemed to be pretty widespread was a lack of transparency on PJM's part, just in terms of the inputs they're using and the data they use to arrive at their models. And basically, I think when we had spoken a couple weeks ago, I believe you had said, you can't replicate their models to test the results and see if they're accurate. So I'm kind of wondering what PJM has said on this front in terms of why they use proprietary data and yeah, what the purpose of that is.
Sure. Yep. So to be clear, though, no market participant can have complete access to the inputs and the data used by PJM for its models. That would violate antitrust laws. We got to be very mindful that market participants can't know what costs other participants have, as that could allow for collusion. But there are valid criticisms that stakeholders asked about transparency, and they are still asking about those ELCC class ratings. In many instances, PJM still has not provided answers. So that is a concern. For example, it doesn't get a lot of the limelight, but there's a ELCC class for something called intermittent hydros. This class, it's not the largest fleet of megawatts in PJM, but its class rating fell from 41% to 36%. So in a chart, PJM says, well, that's a drop of 5%. But if you actually look at 5% relative to the 41% that you started out with, that's a decrease of 12%. That's a huge drop for a fleet that doesn't understand what the heck is going on. And I in my opinion, I'm not speaking for all the hydros for sure. PJM said that the reason for a lot of the movement, and again, we were asking questions, and so because we can't get the model inputs, and that's for good reason. Again, we don't want to violate any antitrust laws. So we said, PJM, what's going on here? And they said, okay, here's what's happening. We updated our load forecast, and we implemented this thing called expected unserved energy. EUE is the acronym for that, and that's shifting the risk of not serving energy from the summer months to the winter months. And as we get more of these variable resources on the system, solar, for example, when the sun goes down, now that risk profile shifts from, let's say, 5 p.m. to maybe it's 7 p.m. when the sun isn't shining and the wind isn't quite blowing hard yet. And they came up with these examples, and they generally make sense. Okay, there's more, load growth in the winter, and more of these resources are coming on that are inverter based, and they're not going to be available. But when you step back and you say, okay, well, how does this fit in for the intermittent hydros, for example? They generally perform very well in the winter months when the system peaks, December and January, good performance. And the generators that are intermittent hydro, their output in a day is probably pretty constant, meaning the amount of water flowing down the river at 5 p.m. is probably pretty close to the amount of water at 6 p.m. and 7 p.m. It's not dependent on the sun or the wind. It's dependent on the water and gravity and these sorts of things. So when you ask PJM, well, I understand what you're saying is the explanation, but it doesn't seem to fit for this class. Can you help me understand how is it that this class is going down in ratings and this other class is going up for the same reasons? Doesn't make sense. We get crickets. And so that's the frustrating part. And that's the thing that's really starting to, I think, wear on a lot of the stakeholders is we just simply can't get the answers that we're asking for. PJM is trying. They have a lot of generators asking a lot of questions. They only have so many people that can go through and answer them all. But it still, begs the question of will you have confidence in the auction results?
Well, you kind of speak to them, being kind of overwhelmed by the amount of feedback and things like that. So it kind of leads perfectly into my next question. I'm wondering if there's a chance any of this is tweaked or changed before this summer auction, or if it's too tight of a turnaround, or if they don't have, the mandate to under, having to go through FERC and things like that. So,
Yeah, there's always a chance, right? Always a chance that the unexpected will occur. But the reality is, there PJM has, sort of figuratively made its bed and now we have to sleep in it. I appreciate that PJM sought time to ensure its model is correct, to provide the additional education to stakeholders, to work more closely with the market monitor, to allow independent review and verification. These are all good things. I just don't see that there will be a wholesale change to the auction rules. Because PJM has a replacement rate in hand issued to it by FERC. PJM would need to go back to FERC with another filing asking for a different rate, basically a different set of rules. And there's just a, it's just not enough time to do that unless they would seek expedited treatment. And there's always regulatory ways about it. So that's why I said there's always a chance, but I think you summed it up right. It's simply too tight of a turnaround.
Sure. Well, in I mean, I guess better news, there were some reforms that got less pushback. The approval of a stop loss measure to non-performance charges being one. I'm just wondering your thoughts on this from a developer's perspective, and then if there were other reforms that you found useful or at least constructive.
Yeah, that's a great question, and one that I could talk to you day and night about. My company actually originally proposed a trifecta of changes to RPM. Maybe it was about 10 months ago, and it included three things: modifying the triggers for what constitutes a performance assessment interval, the PAI thing that I talked about. The second was tethering the stop loss to the base residual auction price. So the formula that determines how much a generator could lose if it doesn't perform in the delivery year, instead of it being based on something called net CONE, it would be based on what you got paid, the base residual auction. And the third thing was tethering the non-performance rate to the base residual auction. And the non-performance rate is what you actually get charged in the those intervals when you don't perform. So the stick, as I described earlier. When these three changes were brought to the stakeholders for a vote, the members approved the proposal. In fact, they approved them twice in two different senior committees. But PJM disagreed with the members and the will of the members, and initially only filed that first option, the PAI trigger. And then in the October filing, it did file the second part of the three tranche, changes that the members sought. But we still have a scenario where the stop loss and the non-performance rate now are tied to two different inputs. One is the base residual auction price. The other is something again called net CONE, the net cost of new entry. And that's a concern. We have two things that are related, but they're based on different inputs. So to me, that is a very real concern from a reliability perspective, because you could have generators that just have a very bad day, a very bad week if there's PAIs in those hours, and they just say, that's it, we're done, we're out of here, we're just we're gonna not worry about running when the system needs us. I would hope that would never happen. Generators have an incentive to perform always. They can always get energy revenues even if they're not getting any more capacity revenue. But you're sort of putting a lot of hope and faith. And that's not how, developers want to see the markets work. It's not how consumers want to see the markets work.
Yeah, just kind of, I guess, on balance with some of these reforms that are, seen as needing more work, and these other reforms that are seen as at least like a good step in the right direction. I'm kind of wondering how you see that kind of filtering down to this auction and how you see, I guess, participation in this auction compared to last year and other recent years. Yeah.
Yeah, that's something I really work hard in trying to do is predict the future. The ELCC changes, as you were describing, if you look at across all of the classes, the vast majority of them, the ratings have gone down, especially relative to how it was in the pre-ELCC environment when it was based on E4D. So what I imagine will happen is a reduction in the quantity of capacity that clears the auction. There's also a reduction in the target quantity of capacity that PJM will be aiming to procure. So basically, the amount of demand that it needs to buy capacity on behalf of, that's going down a little. But it's not a one-for-one change. So a megawatt decrease in supply doesn't mean a megawatt decrease in load. It's going to be more. The supply pool will be tighter than it has been. And so if this RPM thing has any, economic backbone, philosophy or theory behind it, supply tightens, demand is growing, prices should increase. We could anticipate that. We could anticipate the reserve margins to tighten. So it's all, time will tell, but there's another thing, this RPM has a curve to it. And PJM, one of the changes that they filed and received approval for was to sort of increase the curve by pushing it up. They're not changing the shape, but what they're doing there is really just saying, in the old days, if the supply and the demand curve cleared at this point, it's now going to clear at a point higher up, which means a higher price. So you take a lot of these different things that came in that filing, and the expectation that I have is prices will increase. It could be a lot. It could not be a lot. But I would expect prices to increase.
Gotcha. Well, I guess just to kind of close out, FERC sort of left the door open for PJM to refile some of its proposed changes with some, adjustments to things like market seller offer cap. I'm just kind of wondering what kind of reforms are specifically being called for and how much of a change they'd represent, and if you expect the RTO to actually push forward with those.
Sure. Yeah. FERC did provide guidance to PJM on what aspects of that docket needed to be addressed for it to be found just and reasonable. The market seller offer cap, or MSOC, is an issue that PJM has now tried three times to modify, and each time it's been unsuccessful. It appears that PJM is trying to use the market seller offer cap as the means to an end to increase capacity prices, to send a signal to developers to invest in the market, even though the available supply is so much above current demand that prices should not increase. Again, this is why I call it a construct and not a market. For example, PJM used to aim for about a 15% reserve margin. And then after the BRA would run, the auction would run, it would clear sometimes 20, 25% reserves. So in that paradigm, prices should not be high. You're aiming for 15% reserves and you're getting, 30, 40, 50% above that on a percentage basis. Prices should be low. You don't need that signal that says, hey, we need more. We don't need more. We're getting enough. We may not like it. We may be concerned about the future 5 years down the road, but in that snapshot of when the auction is run, the market looks good. It looks healthy. And so prices should be low. So what PJM has been trying to do is say, well, if we have all of this supply, but we want to make sure people continue to develop and invest in PJM's footprint, we need higher prices. And so the market seller offer cap is an opportunity that, or a tool in the toolbox that PJM is trying to take advantage of to allow prices to go higher, even though the market signals, which are we have enough capacity, at least in this snapshot year, this silo year, we're good. And that's one of the many problems I have with RPM. It's a 3 year forward auction, but for 1 year, no developer is developing a power plant for 1 year's capacity prices or 1 hour of energy prices or whatever. You're investing for 10, 15, 20, 30 years, depending on the type of project. But the capacity construct just says, you clear, you get this money for 1 year. Who knows about next year? So there is a lot. I do expect that PJM will absolutely refile the market seller offer cap and the other issues that it tried to address in that filing. My personal hope is that PJM will leave the rules in place for multiple BRAs. And the reason for that is, you know, we constantly are changing the rules, and prices are going all over the place from one year to the next. If you look at them, sometimes they increase, sometimes they decrease, sometimes they increase here, sometimes they decrease there. And we're never really able to step back and say, what is driving this? You know, what's going on? Because we've changed so many different variables that you can't pinpoint, well, what's the thing that changed that caused this? So if we could just leave things alone, and PJM, of course, you know, RPM is the reliability pricing model. So if there's a reliability scenario, you know, an issue that it can say, boy, this is a problem. We have to address this stat. Okay, fine. But if it's just, you know, we think we can tweak the model a little, you know, get a little bit of extra gas mileage out of it, let it be. And the other thing, Colt, that we have to remember is in using that car analogy, every 4 years, there's a mandate that PJM has to do something called the quadrennial review, where it opens up the hood on RPM and it looks at a certain number of things, the cost of new entry, the reference resource technology, the shape of the curve. And then, you know, if there's any other little bells and whistles that it thinks, you know, now's the time to address, you know, it can do that at that time. That's coming up in about 2 years. And we typically start that process, you know, in advance of that. So it would be great if PJM would just, unless we have a need to address a reliability issue, let it go, let it be. Step back. Let's have some auctions. They're delayed with one set of rules, and let's see what happens.
Perfect. Well, it sounds like it's only going to get more complicated and more more contentious. So I'm sure we'll speak about this again soon. But yeah, Steve, thanks for your time and insight.
It was my pleasure. Thank you. Looking forward.
Yep. Talk soon.
Bye now.